You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside. We're the sanctuary at the end of the treks. I'm Justin Olenzdeski, and I'm here to help you digest what has been a not-so-exciting week. Joining me once again are Daniel T. Richards.
Yo, yo.
And the Doctor. Really? Really? How about our first segment, the news with Daniel T. Richards?
So as Justin alluded to, this week was terrible. Absolutely terrible. Nothing happened whatsoever.
Terrible. Just terrible.
So we will be giving you the best worst news of the week, starting with something that North Dakotans are going to like, all of six of you who are listening to us, which is that the Gallup organization recently released their well-being survey. It's an annual survey that interviews more than 178,000 Americans from all 50 states. The well-being index scores various things like life evaluation, emotional health, work environment, physical health, healthy behaviors, and access to basic necessities. And it turns out that North Dakota is the happiest, most well-off state in the union.
It just seems to me that some of these things you just listed are kind of dubious. Access to basic necessities as defined by who? Like the United Nations? Because I'm pretty sure they define internet as a basic human right or basic necessity.
That's true. But North Dakota in first, South Dakota second, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Montana rounding out the top five. But where would you guess, both Justin and the Doctor, where would you guess which state has the lowest well-being ranking?
The lowest?
Yes. Which state is the suckiest state in the union?
The suckiest state in the union, I'm going to guess Mississippi.
All right. The Doctor?
I would have to guess New Jersey.
I don't care what the poll says. That's the right answer.
Objectively correct, yes, New Jersey. I once had a friend tell me, if the entire world is going to end, and someone said to you, the only way to save the world is to go to New Jersey, don't go, because it's terrible. That's what he told me. No, the worst state in the union is, in fact, not New Jersey. It is West Virginia.
Oh, I should have guessed that.
Everyone forgets about West Virginia.
That's why it's the worst state in the union.
Inbreeding does not equate to happiness, apparently. Rounding out the bottom five moving up, so West Virginia is the worst, 49th is Kentucky. Mississippi, 48, so
I gotta get
pretty
points
close
for that,
to,
right? Where's Chris Hardwick? Points!
So that's not bad. 47, Alabama. 46, Ohio. So I think the thing about North Dakota is interesting to me because of the work I've done in the past is that it's the home of the fracking boom, which actually has a lot to do with it because people have a lot more disposable income. A lot of people are employed. Unemployment is virtually zero in the state of North Dakota. They have
a
budget surplus.
Don't Walmart make like a ridiculous amount of money in North Dakota?
Yeah, basically sort of the minimum service jobs there are making about $25 an hour doing anything. Basically because they can't bring in employees fast enough. So.
I think your neighbor heard about that and they got in their car and drove to North Carolina or North Dakota really quickly. Did you hear that?
I did. It was fairly good timing. It was good comedic timing.
National and state parks are ablaze with brightly colored fall foliage.
Foliage. They just run around and they put tinfoil on everything.
And there is a plethora of pumpkin patches, corn mazes, hayrides, and more.
Yeah, I think fall is perhaps the best time to visit North Dakota because it may be the only time that doesn't have snow. So, I don't know. I would like to go to North Dakota just because it's almost like the gold rush of the 1840s and 50s. And it would be interesting to see. Did you know that Williston County, North Dakota, recently beat out every other county in the nation as richest county in America?
This is all because of fracking?
Absolutely. Fracking equals happiness. Never forget it. That also equals happiness. Never forget it. So this week we're doing a little bit of a sci-fi roundup with a bunch of different sort of mini news stories semi-related to sci-fi in some way. Right? Sound good?
Sci-fi slash fantasy, yeah. I mean, the line's so blurred sure. These days that...
Right. So the first little nugget of news is that there's another movie starring Chris Pratt.
I was going to actually use that for the opening. I was going to say we've yet to be taken over by Chris Pratt and Elizabeth Banks.
Chris Pratt seems to be in every movie lately. This is Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, which I consider myself pretty nerdy about superheroes. I've never heard of this series before.
I haven't heard of it either. And actually, I learned something this week that I probably should have known. I'm probably like losing so much cred by saying this right now. But apparently there is a character in it who goes by the name of Warrock. And the nerdcore rapper Adam Warrock gets his name from that, and I didn't even realize that until this week.
What a terrible nerdcore rapper you are, Justin.
Believe
just
me, I know.
Awful.
I know. I've heard. That's the word on the interstreets. the inner streets, yeah.
So anyway, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy released their first trailer this week. You should check it out if you haven't seen it yet. Spoiler alert, there's a raccoon. Other than that, it wasn't very interesting to me. I actually thought it was a little bit awkward, the way the whole trailer was shot. It was very, as Eddie Izzard would say, just a bunch of people opening doors going, what is it? Oh. That's the entire trailer to me. It's a bunch of awkward situations.
Well, that's what they were going for, because they were trying to introduce, because nobody else has heard of these people either, so they were trying to introduce them all.
I guess. Didn't entice me to see the movie. Did you see the trailer, Doctor?
No, but I know Vin Diesel's in it.
No, Vin Diesel's not in it. A tree voiced by Vin Diesel is in it. And a raccoon voiced by Bradley Cooper is in it.
It counts. There's
pictures. By the way, this is a mainstream, like, what's the budget on this movie? Like, hundreds of millions of dollars, and we're saying there's a tree voiced by Vin Diesel and a raccoon voiced by Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, I didn't really get... it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not nerdy enough anymore to understand it.
It made me think of Firefly.
Yeah, definitely. There's a little bit of that.
Chris Pratt's character was very much like Malcolm Reynolds, where they're like, you don't know who I am? I'm the galaxy's most renowned rebel or something like that. Whatever.
Yeah, but Chris Pratt, unfortunately for American actors, I think they can't escape their other work. This doesn't really happen in British cinema or TV, but...
Go, I just want to say, go ahead, set yourself up, because I'm about to prove you wrong, but go ahead.
Okay. But for me, Chris Pratt has already been established as the goofy, I would say, everyman, except that he's more like the slightly mentally challenged everyman. And I can't watch this trailer and think of him as a superhero action star, even on the sort of Malcolm Reynolds goofy action star level. At least Nathan Fillion looks like he could beat someone up.
Look, I'm not going to disagree with you that Nathan Fillion should be in every movie ever. But what are you
I'm
saying?
I'm glad you got my subtext.
What role are you saying has defined Chris Pratt in this way?
Parks and Rec.
Okay. Well, that's proven that he has escaped an earlier role. Do you know what earlier role I'm referring to?
No, because I'd never heard of him before Parks
and
Rec.
Well, that's exactly the entire point. Chris Pratt actually got his start on Everwood. Owned. Good game.
I don't even know what that is.
WB drama from the early 2000s.
Okay, I think the world is better forgetting that it existed.
Come on.
You started with the words WB drama.
Well, that's true.
You could have just said WB. Anyway.
There's a difference. There's the WB dramas, which were all like melodramatic and had teens in them. The precursor to the CW dramas. And then there were like the black comedies, like the Wayne's Brothers show and the Jamie Foxx show.
Oh, I thought you meant they were like dark and brooding. You just literally meant black, like you're racist. Yeah, okay. what was Chris Pratt's role in Everwood?
He played the older brother football player of the young female lead.
Was he goofy and dumb?
You know, just because he's a football player doesn't mean he's dumb.
Owned! Okay, moving on.
He wasn't that goofy, but he was dumb.
Thank you. Is there anything else that needs to be said about Guardians? I don't know what else can be said.
Raccoon about with a gun.
Who rides a tree. A walking, living Vin Diesel tree. Vin Diesel would. That's a little... Anyway. So, the other bit of news that came out this week is that the Fantastic Four cast was basically finalized. And this brought out all of the racism on the internet. Because the Human Torch is being played by an African-American fellow.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So,
remember, he's also trying to outdo Chris Evans, who's now Captain America.
Yes. So this is Michael B. Jordan, who will be playing the Human Torch. I don't know who that is. I've never seen him in anything else.
You've never heard of Michael Jordan?
This is Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, I don't know who that is either.
Yes, not the star of Space Jam, although hold that thought. So I don't understand. So the rest of the cast is Miles Teller as Mr. Fantastic, who, Kate Mara as the Invisible Woman, who I only know from her nude scenes in House of Cards.
You know where got her start?
Everwood?
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
Yes.
What the heck is it? Anyway.
I don't make this up. I don't make it up.
And Jamie Bell as The Thing. Who? I don't know any of these people.
I don't know who Jamie Bell is.
So the internet
is... Jamie Bell in? Bennett.
I have no idea.
Dr. IMDb that for us. But we... actually, recently we saw Miles Teller in a movie. Have you seen anything Miles Teller has been in?
I don't know who that... Was he in... from the background here, it looks like he was in that animated movie that bombed at the box office, the one about the boy and his dog. I forget.
Oh, yeah. You love this about Jamie Bell.
Is it Bear Claw?
No. Apparently he was in Nymphomaniac Volume 1 and 2 in 2013.
Are you sure this is the right Jamie Bell?
Yeah.
you didn't go to the porn IMDb, did you?
No, I didn't. He's in Fantastic Four. He's Ben Grimm.
Mm-hmm, the Fantastic Foursome, you mean?
Apparently.
No, but Miles Teller was in this movie 21 and Over, which was basically like the Hangover for college kids.
And wait, wasn't the Hangover for college kids?
Well, I mean for college age kids. So like their Asian friend is going to interview to be a doctor the next morning, and then it's his 21st birthday, so they bring him out to get drunk, but then he gets lost, so they're trying to get... I think his last name's Chang. So they're trying to get Chang home to his dad.
Does he remember who he is? Or was his memory like?
That's how bad the movie is, I don't remember. But his dad was actually played by Pierre Chang / Marvin Candle from Lost. So there was that. But, Miles Teller was relatively entertaining in the movie. He had some good lines. I mean, he didn't really redeem it because the subject matter was kind of, you know, The Hangover. But he was sort of playing the Pete in the League character. So he was kind of amusing. I don't know how that's going to translate to, like, a young Rick Reed. Because, you know, Mr. Fantastic is, like, this really cultured guy, right?
Yeah. That's one of the complaints, is that Teller has a track record of sort of being the one-liner guy. And that's sort of the exact opposite of Reed.
Yeah, that's kind of the Human Torch.
Yeah. And then, of course, like I said, the internet gathered all of its racism up so they could talk about the black guy playing Human Torch and how that was racist.
Because
anyway,
he's burnt.
Right, exactly. A little overdone, which is what this story is.
What else do we have?
So we're going to move on.
In our sci-fi roundup.
Michael Jordan, J. Just kidding. LeBron James will be starring in Space Jam 2.
Are you sure this isn't LeBron B. James?
Not according to Deadline Hollywood, which starts with the really clever, what's up, Doc? A broken nose. Ouch. This is how the article starts. I'm not even kidding. After he recovers from the injury suffered in last night's game, NBA MVP LeBron James will be ready for his close-up with Bugs Bunny.
I don't even understand. Like, okay, I happened to see that injury because I was at the gym at the time. Like, I try to avoid watching LeBron James on television. I mean, I begrudgingly respect him now because he got over the hump and he can actually win the championship at this point. But I saw the injury, and he did what he did, and that's he gets the ball at the top of the arc, and rather than dribble, he like takes 8 steps and plows through everyone and tries to dunk it. And when he did, somebody happened to slap him in the face. Now, I say happened because it looked accidental, and if it wasn't accidental, I'm going to pretend it was because I just like seeing LeBron James get slapped in the face.
Was it Daffy Duck? That sounds like a Daffy Duck move to me.
Well, I guess the Thunder were playing the role of Daffy Duck the other night. But okay. I don't know how his nose broke. Maybe it's just because, like, basketball players' hands are so big that the slaps are harder than normal people's.
But did he get hit with a mallet? Was it a pie that had an anvil in it? Was it a gun, but when he shot it out, it was actually a punching glove attached to one of those springs that knocked him in the face? Did he see little birdies around his head when he hit the court?
All right, I'm going to outdo you here. All right, ready?
Okay.
Is he actually going to get to the end of shooting the entire movie and he figures out it's just a surprise for his birthday? Does anyone know what that was a reference to?
No, but we're sure you'll tell us.
That was a reference to the NES game Bugs Bunny Birthday Bash, where he thinks all his friends are against him, and at the end of every level you have to knock his friend out. You know, like, you get to the end, it's Sylvester, it's Foghorn Leghorn. But then you get to the end of the game, and you figure out it's all just an elaborate troll.
Wow. I hope this discussion of Space Jam 2 is an elaborate troll, because, really?
Wait, we needed another Space Jam with LeBron James? Two things. One, you had to figure it was going to happen eventually. I actually am surprised it didn't happen earlier. I mean, they're trying to market him, and they're trying to save the NBA when nobody cares about it anymore. Like, it was sort of inevitable. And I would just like to throw my name in the ring to take over the Muggsy Bogues role. I would just like to note I'm 3 inches taller than Muggsy Bogues was.
That's funny. Where is Michael Jordan? Why isn't he doing the sequel?
I think he's too busy moving Bobcats to New Orleans or something? I don't know what he's doing these days. But didn't he also run out of money or something because of his kid?
I don't know. I say bring him back to basketball. I'll watch it again. That's all I have.
At the beginning of the movie, they'll probably have like Michael Jordan die and then LeBron be like, I have to take over.
Well, speaking about dying, I'm sorry to break it to you guys, but Space Jam 2 is more like Looney Tunes because it's not going to happen. 22 hours ago, updated ESPN reports that the source is close to LeBron refuted the report from Deadline.
Yeah, I read that too, but it's LeBron. He's just looking for other options. What he's looking for is a better supporting cast so he can actually look good in the movie.
A better supporting cast than Bugs Bunny?
Better than animated cartoons?
Did you guys see what I did there?
Yes, hilarious. Who would be a better basketball star than LeBron James to star in Space Jam 2?
I'm just going to say Rajon Rondo because he plays for the Celtics and he's awesome.
What about Jeremy Lin?
Then the other animated characters would be dragons and tigers.
Can we just put him in Kung Fu Panda 3?
That's racist. And that's all I got.
This was an awful week for the news. I can't even deal with this. All I'm saying is, good thing I saw the Lego movie because we would have had nothing to talk about on this podcast. And that's what we're going to talk about in this week's Weekly Disjustice. I guess I keep talking to myself. I finally saw saw the much-hyped Lego movie. I thought it was pretty good, but I'm going to give the floor to Dan here because he is a big animated movie buff. Although I would like to note, I found out that the movie was written and directed by the people who did the short-lived Clone High on MTV, which I thought was very clever and I thought was very funny. So I guess it's not a surprise that I liked it.
I don't think it's a surprise that you liked it at all. It's full of pop culture references that almost no one in the audience got. It's very fast-paced humor that no one can understand.
Yeah, we were the only ones laughing. I mean, and I kept pointing out all the things it was a reference to. I mean, the whole thing was like a giant reference to The Matrix.
Right, exactly. And the entire time, everyone was just making fun of Chris Pratt. So I really think this is your movie. They made this for you. You are the demographic.
I make fun of Chris Pratt?
Well, we just did.
Oh.
See, I was referencing a segment that we had done a moment ago where Chris Pratt was the... Okay, just making sure.
We were talking about Chris B. Pratt.
Thank you. Running joke from now on. I wasn't as in love with this movie as everyone else was. I thought it was clever. I thought it was very self-aware. But there was something wrong with the pacing of the movie to me. It felt like there was plot, 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 and then sort of this hole where everything that happened wasn't particularly relevant, and then the resolution of the plot in a very...
The abyss of nothing?
Yeah. And there is a twist to the story, which we won't reveal to any audience members who haven't seen it yet, but let's be honest, we haven't seen it by this point. You're probably not going to. I went to actually see it on opening weekend, and I couldn't get in. Every showing was sold out. I had to...
It's Legos.
For this one, I had to take out 3 or 4 6-year-olds so I could get a seat, and it was well worth it. One of the controversial things about this movie is that many people on the political right keep saying that it's an anti-business movie. The best evidence they have, which, granted, not terrible evidence, is that the main bad guy's name is Lord Business. That being said, I don't think it's anti-business. I think that it's just a very touching children's story, and if you take Lego's brand into consideration, the ultimate conflict in it is basically adulthood versus childhood mentality, or growing up versus staying a kid, if you want to parse it out. But, and so I think business in this context was just a conceptualization of adulthood.
Yeah, it was certainly on a certain level that, because like you said before, we most associate adulthood with business.
Mm-hmm. And children, especially.
Right, and the way you see, you know, Chris Pratt's character in the beginning of the movie where he's just, you know, going to work, watching Where Are My Pants, which I feel like was a reference to something like The Big Bang Theory. And, you know, he's listening to the same music as everyone else. And then
everything
comes home
is awesome. I was singing that all the way home, by the way. Go ahead.
So I think there is an element of that, but I think that the movie is anti-irrational business. And one of my major critiques of the movie, which keeps it from being like on the level of a Rise of the Guardians for me, is that, not to be confused with Zack Snyder's Legends of the Guardians.
Or Chris Pratt's Guardians of the Galaxy. Sorry, go ahead.
We should have the raccoon fight the owls.
Oh my god, he would totally eat them and be awesome.
And then at the end of the movie, he can find the Asian kid from 21 and over being protected by Mr. Fantastic.
It's all a big circle jerk here at the midside. Go ahead.
So yeah, I think the conception of business it has is irrational because these people are living under a society that's highly controlled and highly defined, and it's controlled by micromanagers, and the master builders are held captive in a think tank. So it's talking about the way you run business irrationally takes the creativity out of society and takes the childhood out of society. And what kept it from being a really great movie for me, it was on the cusp for me between good and great on the scale of things Justin loves. It's between good and great. Is I didn't think they properly defined business in it and that they didn't show there was any alternative. The two alternatives were basically creative chaos versus super organized business. And they did sort of hint at it where they had like the Cloudland where they talked about there was no government or anything, which that was a really weird aside to me where the unicorn kitty was like, there's no government here. And I was like, okay, Annie's boobs, I'm just going to listen to you because I can picture you on Community. But yeah, it was very strange to me they did that. So maybe there was something else in the script that was cut or there were other scenes that were cut. But there was sort of that dichotomy there, which I thought was a very raw dichotomy. Now, I don't want to spoil anything, but maybe that's because of the kid's mind type thing. You know, they're trying to represent a child's mind.
Right.
So maybe that's because of that. But I do think that they were showing that the irrational conception of business that exists in our society is bad. Because they were very much not only critiquing, you know, not trying to show the way children love Legos, but they were critiquing the way society is built and the way society is organized.
So the only reason at all I will push back on it, because I think your analysis is sound mostly, but the only reason I will push back at all is because at the end of the day, this was not sort of a movie that came from a really profound writer like Zack Snyder or Stephen Moffat. It comes from the Lego company.
But it's the guys who made Clone High.
They hired them to do it, but it's sort of like One Direction hiring Morgan Spurlock to direct their documentary. It's not as if Morgan Spurlock was going to create this masterpiece talking about the culture of boy bands. Ultimately, it's just a sort of fun movie that is supposed to sell a shit ton of plastic bricks.
Right, but I do want to say that I do think that there was in there a pretty profound point that I think is missed in a lot of movies, and I think that's what they were trying to say. So ultimately, this movie is sort of a deconstruction of the, I guess you can say, the Joseph Campbell hero's journey, but I would caution against that because I don't think they're quite doing it. I mean, they had sort of some of the elements where, you know, Chris Pratt is the hero, things change, and then he has like a mystical guide enter into this new world. So there were sort of those elements, but I think it's more the contemporary story we're told. And the contemporary story we're told is, here is an everyman hero, Chris Pratt in Guardians of the Galaxy, right? So you have an everyman hero. And then he's in a super special world where all this crazy shit is happening that, you know, most people in their dull and mundane lives, nothing that awesome ever happens, right? They just convince themselves everything is awesome by listening to Lady Gaga all day. Or Taylor Swift or whatever or Katy Perry. Yeah, Katy Perry is an even better example. I felt like Everything Is Awesome was a good parody and satire of songs like, you know, Katy Perry makes. So that's what most people deal with, and those are most stories. But then in every story, we see the same thing happen. The hero becomes the hero. And how does he become the hero? He does one thing, and what's the word? It starts with a B.
Believes.
He believes. Now, this movie, which was so brilliant at hanging a lantern, the entire movie was like hanging a lantern on hanging a lantern, almost. And hanging a lantern is when you point out something that is ridiculous, so people won't say it's a bad thing. So, like, if you know that there's something wrong with your set for a live show, you point it out to the audience and show that you're aware of it, and they sort of forget about it. Because they're like, oh, yeah, if the creator's aware of it, it's not a big deal. Whereas if they find it on their own, they think you just made a mistake. What this whole movie does is it hangs a lantern on all these tropes in pop culture. That's why it's very meta. That's why the whole thing's like a Matrix reference, or it references all these other things. And it hangs a lantern on this, too. By actually having Chris Pratt's character ask the question, you know, the Morgan Freeman character, Vesuvius, or whatever his name was, who's, you know, obviously Morpheus, says to him, you are the special, and you have to realize that goal, realize that identity, by believing. And he goes, essentially he says, why should I believe when I have no reason to believe? Which to me, that line was the core question of the movie. Now, I won't spoil how it answers that, because they do it in a very, very unique way, and it's very clever, which is why I think it's getting like this 96% that it doesn't necessarily deserve. Because once again, as it hung a lantern on things, it hung a lantern on the fact that it was animation. It answered the question by saying that, and this is why I think it's a profound movie, and this is why I think ultimately it's a good movie, and I mean morally good. It answered the question by basically saying, the state of nature for humanity is to believe you're special. And if you don't believe, there's a reason you don't believe you're special. And it's because somebody told you you weren't special. Which is why they showed business basically telling everyone they're not special. Follow the instructions. Don't think for yourself. You're not special. And it creates this cycle, you know, where the adults tell the children they're not special. And then the children grow up and tell their children they're not special.
So basically, public school system?
Well, right. I mean, they didn't go that way, right? I mean, that's the way to ultimately go with this. If you're going to have a truly, you know, awesome epic movies, you talk about the systematic way it's done. That's why they would need to distinguish between business and, or irrational business and rational business. And the same thing, they'd have to talk about rational government versus irrational government. That type of idea. And that's what stopped it from being to the next level and stopped it from being like what Dan said, that profound. But what made it good was we finally saw a movie that said, no, the natural state is to believe that you're special, to believe in your individuality and what you think with your mind. And whatever you think with your mind, just make it. Now, of course, as Dan's pointing out, the whole point of that was to say, make it with Legos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree with you. But I do.
You disagree that that was the point of the movie?
No, yes and no. I think it's slightly simpler than that, if only because I'm going to use my it's the Lego movie argument over and over again. So I saw themes of individuality versus collectivism, adulthood versus childhood, but I don't know. The Chris Pratt question thing is interesting. I didn't think about that at the time and his answer to the question. I'll give that more thought and may eventually fall to your side of this argument. But I thought it wasn't as good and wasn't as profound ultimately because it came off as a commercial in the end.
Well, right. And that was what kept me from getting into it at first. I found the opening scene, and this, it made me feel so old, and maybe this is my get off my lawn moment of the week. But the animation was just so, like, it was just so jarring, and the cutting was so quick in the first scene that I just felt, like, so disconnected from everything. It literally, I stopped there and I thought, I remember when people were complaining that Scott Pilgrim was too frenetic and had too many cuts in it. And then This movie exists.
Right. That being said, I think this is hands down going to win Animated Movie of the Year for the next Academy Awards. I'm not sure what could come out to beat it. Pixar's got nothing coming out in 2014.
Oh, so. Well, okay. If Pixar's got nothing coming out.
Pixar's next movie is 2015, so that's all I got.
I think that's all we need to have. And remember, if you ever need to believe, it's like a cat poster on the wall. You'll get that when you see the movie. Moving on to the most popular segment, because Drew loves it, Yahoo Answers.
Just another question. Just another answer, I won't pick it. And just another question. Just another answer, I won't pick it.
First question. And I think the doctor wants to read this one.
Yes.
But by the way, this is historic. This is the first time anyone else has read a Yahoo Answers question.
Okay.
My God.
Ooh, special.
What next? Black people voting?
No, black people is the human torch.
Okay.
They should do a separate but equal Fantastic Four movie.
Oh my god. That sounds
He should only play 3/5 of the role.
Yeah. Fantastic 3/5. Fantastic 3/5.
He could be him until he turns into the torch and then it's Chris Evans again. They just use stock footage of Chris Evans?
This is the horrible part of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Alright.
Alright, just read the question.
Okay. Writers, what is your writing process? How do you plan out your writing? I write a lot. But a lot of times when I write, my ideas get kind of jumbled, which makes it hard to get anything done when I have to constantly think back to make sure I've included everything and didn't forget things, if that makes sense. So my question is, how do you plan out your writing? Or rather, what is your writing process?
How do you get your ideas flowing? Are there any certain techniques that you use to make it easier to keep onto one train of thought at a time? So,
Justin.
Justin.
Oh, first I want to know why you wanted to read that so badly. She was over here, like, motioning to me, like, I want to read this.
I read it.
I thought she did well.
I wanted to read it in the, like, frame of thought he was writing it in.
Well, the frame of thought he was writing it in demonstrates why he has no idea how to organize his writing.
Exactly.
Because he was just writing stream of consciousness. How do you plan out your writing? You actually fucking plan it out. That's what you do.
This is very Adam Carolla right now.
No, it's like, he's like, how do you kick a soccer ball? I'm trying to kick it, but I'm using my hands.
Or I'm tapping it on my feet. Nothing happens.
I mean, it's there's just so many levels of details you could go into this question. The best way to go about it is to say, what am I trying to say? What is the best way to say that? And then say, what is point A I'm going to start at, and what's the journey I'm going to take to get to point B?
So let me try to get some practical information out of this question. Just squeeze it like a turnip and get blood.
Stone? Blood from a stone?
Or a turnip. It's either one. Google that shit. Do you, as a writer, for instance, do you ever use outlining?
I do when the topic is more complex or the piece is longer. I don't use it so much anymore for shorter stuff because I can sort of do it in my mind. I've just gotten so proficient at it. It's sort of the idea that when you practice something over and over, you don't really need to actually do it. But yeah, I mean, definitely practically, if we're talking about outlining, then yeah, definitely outline. And when I do that, you know, for a larger thing, like if I'm working on a script, I'll say like, what the three acts are, or, you know, if it's a hour-long drama, what the five acts are, what happens at the beginning and end of each act, what each of the characters does in the act, and then what the scenes are and how that leads into the next.
Okay. And then do you do, for instance, pre-writing or first drafts and then edit then second draft, or is it more organic and flowing for you?
I think this is something we read about, actually, when we were in school at Clemson together, where the first draft is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, I mean, I do that in the sense that I'll get to the end and it'll be finished, and then I'll go back and I'll edit that again anyway. But it's not so much like back in the day when people only had, like, you know, ink, an inkwell and a feather pen that they had to write, and then they had to go back and rewrite. It's more, you know, it's easy to write a whole paragraph and then edit that real quick, or write a sentence and delete it real quick. So I don't know if there's any such thing as a true first draft anymore.
Hmm. That's interesting. How about, Doctor? Do you have any insights about this in terms of copy for an advertisement, for instance? Do you plan out the writing, and then is there a process for that you use? I'm asking both of you these questions because I have a certain process at which works for me, but seems to be completely bizarre. So I'm trying
That's along the lines of what I do. I mean, it just depends if the product actually inspires me to write about it, and if it doesn't, then I actually have to have a certain process to walk through. I do a lot of research about the stuff I don't really care about, so I get more interested in it, like kind of forces me to be interested in it. But if it's something that I, like, just love and adore, and I'll just be inspired that way.
Hmm, okay.
Well, if we're going to talk about, like, what I actually do for my process, I just try and think of, like, a ridiculous title, and then I try to think of a ridiculous thing to say right at the end. And then I build everything around that. I mean, I'm not being 100% serious, but, like, if you look at some of, like, the better writers, like, if you want a really good idea of structure and organization, look at Jackie McMullen. She writes for Boston Sports on ESPN, and she's very good with structure, and she's very good with getting from point A to point B, where she starts, she tells a story, and then in the middle she tells you the significance of it, and then at the end she says a very, like, witty, concise, poignant thing, which really puts a point on everything she just said before that. And I'm sure she organizes that.
Okay.
So what's your bizarre
Oh, I'm not going to tell you. It's patent pending.
Really? You're just going to leave that out there and not tell us?
No, I'm more old school, which no one seems to be anymore, which is that I write a, whatever subject I'm going to write about, I define the subject, I define the theme, and then I actually make an outline, and then I write from that outline, and then once I've written a draft, I have to walk away completely, and I write. I don't do any editing in my first round. I just write to the end. Or if I have to skip around, fine. But then I have to completely go away from it and then come back and be in complete editing mode as opposed to writing mode. And I only edit. And then if I need to rewrite, go back to writing mode. And I have to keep those things really separate. Otherwise, anything I write doesn't flow as well.
And when you sign on to the internet, does it still go beep, beep, beep?
Yeah.
No, uh-huh. I mean, I don't think it's bizarre. I just think it's the way you learned and the way you got used to it. And like I said, I just don't really do that because I do a lot of it in my head. And something to remember is when I come up with an idea, I don't necessarily write about it right away. It sits in my head and sometimes I'll go, oh, okay, that's the way to fix that. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like I said, I did those outlines for longer stuff. Like when I wrote the pilot for Looters recently, I did a whole outline with that, and I had to walk away from it and everything. It's also, yeah. I'm like super hypercritical. Like I could just write and just write a bunch of stuff down, but like the second I put one sentence down that I hated, like I wouldn't even want that sentence to even exist. And I'll be like, I have to get rid of that because I don't want anyone to know I ever wrote that. If anyone ever knew I ever wrote that, I would be so embarrassed.
So you're worried about the NSA is what you're telling me.
But even the audience is the NSA. Notebook, even if I put it in a notebook, I would cross it out. Look, even in my notes for like how I was going to start the podcast, I was originally going to start with, and now I'm going to make this exist, so nobody be in front of me. But it was originally going to be, welcome to the Midside, where we've been playing Flappy Birds since last week. But I crossed that out after I wrote it, because I was like, no, that's awful.
All right, makes sense. I was just curious. Trying to get some useful information out of these godforsaken questions.
Talking about godforsaken questions, I'm going to
see what I did there.
You did that on purpose. Next question. And I'm actually going to read two questions in one here. First question. Who is the one getting oppressed? The religious waiter who has to serve gays against his religion? Or the gay that isn't being served? By the way, I love that he's called the gay. Who's getting oppressed by this question? I don't know, the gay? Or the gay that isn't being served by the religious waiter because he is gay? And by the way, I love the note this person said here. In their explanation, answer carefully.
I'm pretty sure he's a religious waiter.
As if the NSA is reading this and we have to be careful because we don't want this on our public record. Answer carefully, guys. The NSA is reading. And then the second question, which is a cognate of this question, is it right to give religions the right to discriminate against anyone of another religion? And this is the explanation. The Republican-controlled Arizona State Senate voted along party lines Wednesday to pass Senate Bill 1062, a measure that would allow businesses to reject service to any customer based on the owner's religious beliefs. They could refuse service to anyone who commits adultery, has sex before marriage, etc., because they are not living according to the beliefs of the religious owner. Have Republicans gone crazy to pass legislation like this?
Okay.
Can I answer?
Okay. It's your show.
My answer to the second question will inform the first question.
Oh.
The world has gone crazy that they have to pass legislation like this.
Say what?
Shocking, I know. But if I own a restaurant and I want to not serve the people who watch Downton Abbey, then
oh my
I have
God.
Every right to.
Point of order. Did you just call it Downton Abbey?
Yes.
Move along. Nothing to see here.
You understand the point I'm making though, right?
Right. You have no idea what's on TV. Yes, go ahead.
It's about the church in the middle of the town.
Yes, that's the premise.
It's like Cheers, except the church.
where everybody knows you're gay. Yeah, go ahead.
Any business owner has the right to refuse service to anyone he wants for any reason he wants. It is his business. Which goes to a further point, you do not give people rights. They have them.
Say what?
What?
What is this you're speaking of?
Well, it basically goes along the lines of the signs in the stores that say we have the right to refuse service to anyone. And it's, like, it's completely, you know, arbitrary.
I've always wondered about those signs, too, because you do not have the right to refuse service to anyone. If you go, you're black, get out of here. But you can't do that to me. Look at the sign, I can. You can't just poke it.
That's a terrible black voice. That's racist, sir. And I won't stand for this. That's a terrible whiny white guy voice, sir. I will not stand for this racism.
No, I mean, you can't just put up a sign in your establishment. I have the right to kill anyone in this establishment. Like,
well, no, that's a little different, I feel.
It is, I'm just kidding.
So, I completely agree with you. We discriminate all the time for all sorts of reasons. You know where the biggest discrimination comes? People who can't afford your product. That's a huge discrimination.
Oh, no, I just heard you say everyone should be allowed to have everything even if they can't afford it. That's what I just heard.
Communism! So, I think that this is ridiculous, like you said. But this comes off the heels of a case where, wasn't there a baker somewhere who refused to make a cake for a gay wedding? And the court said he had to make the cake?
Right.
And that's what Arizona was reacting to. Because the court actually forced the baker to make a cake.
Right, because it was for a gay marriage and he didn't want to make it for the gay marriage. Which also begs the question, why if you're gay do you want a cake by somebody who hates gay people?
Because there's a little bit of vindictiveness there. And
what does this cake look like that he
Let's go to the homophobic baker and have him make a giant fuck cake.
I think they were lesbians, Justin, so I don't think they'd be much interested in a cock cake.
Oh, were they lesbians?
I think so.
No, I'm old, right? So when I hear the word gay, I think of dudes. When I hear lesbians, I think of women, okay? I'm just saying.
You are so behind the times. So I definitely think that in the question, who is the one getting oppressed, the religious waiter who has to serve gays? Well, one, if he wants to keep his job and the owner says, you have to serve gays, he's not being oppressed he's not being oppressed. Or the gay who isn't being served by the religious waiter, also not being oppressed.
Because
they can go
to
a different restaurant.
Right. But what if the government is the one saying the waiter has to serve the gay person?
Then, yes, the waiter, his rights, and the owner of the restaurant's rights are being violated and they're being oppressed. Definitely.
Right. Can I just...
Look, I don't think businesses should go around discriminating against the gays. First of all, the gays have a lot of money. They have a ton of disposable income, and they are willing to spend it on really expensive wine and cheese.
Try having a wedding, or planning a wedding, without a gay person involved.
Yeah, you can't. It's illegal.
You want to do your own flower arrangement? Good luck.
They will be everywhere. It'll be a complete mess. So it's not a good idea to discriminate against anyone, really, except for people who don't have money. But if there was a business that wanted to discriminate against blacks, gays, women, Jews, that's fine. They'd be out of business in 15 seconds. But that's how the market handles discrimination. Anyway.
Right, but people would say, well, what if it doesn't go out of business? Is it right that that such an establishment exists?
Then if it didn't go out of business in some bizarro universe that the left lives in, then gay people could open up their own bakery. And they would make a shit ton of money because gays have all the money.
The gaykery.
Thank you. I think we should move on now.
No. I have one last thing to say.
You can top the gaykery?
Yes. It's actually the question.
Okay.
There is actually a grammatical error in this question that makes it ridiculous.
Okay.
The religious waiter who has to serve gays against his religion. Technically, this sentence is saying he is serving gays to be used against his religion.
Yes.
So
wielding the gay against his religion.
So maybe he's like using paper, like he's one of these process servers for court, and he serves them.
Mm-hmm.
But no, if you don't, you need the word two, who has to serve two gays. Last question.
Oh.
Making a zombie series. Does anyone have any good ideas for way a survivor can be rescued? Not a way a survivor can be rescued.
No way.
And there's a whole long like write up here, but I don't want to read it, so. No, I've already been way too in this podcast.
Way too racist tonight.
Does anyone have any ideas for a way to get rescued in a zombie series?
Doctor, aren't you a zombie person? I mean, not you. You're not a zombie yourself.
I'm not a
zombie.
I
don't mean that you yourself eat brains and walk around aimlessly, but.
Didn't end up going off in the concert because zombies. So using that as like a giant flare on the stage, all the pyrotechnics, the sound and everything, that would be pretty cool.
To like so Van Halen's jump?
Yes.
So that sets off a signal and someone comes and rescues them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that should have been the end of Zombieland when they were in the amusement park.
That would have been cool.
What about you, Dan?
I don't have any good ways for people to be rescued. That's not the best part of zombie films, is it? Aren't the best part of zombie films either the unique creative ways to kill zombies or the unique creative ways that zombies kill other people?
I thought you were watching The Walking Dead.
I nominally am watching The Walking Dead, although it's just constant stream of depression. So
the best part of zombie movies is how it affects the people, not the zombies.
No. Hold on. Zombie movie / zombie TV series.
Okay, fair enough. Fair point. I'll give you that. But okay, you want to know my answer?
Of course. It's your show.
The best way to be for a survivor to be rescued? Aliens.
Interdimensional aliens?
No, just aliens.
Oh.
This has not been done yet.
Aliens v. zombies, or just the aliens come and rescue the humans from the zombies?
The aliens come and rescue the humans.
Hmm.
Or what if it's like a reverse Predators? So in Predators, they take them all to the Predators' home planet, so the Predators can fight them and like pass their tests and like graduate. What if the zombie plague was released by aliens to test which humans were the strongest, and then they rescue the humans that have survived after the pre-designated amount of time to help them save their world?
That sounds overly complicated.
Actually, I just came up with that. I'm not even kidding.
You just came up with that brilliance just now?
Yes.
Amazing. Huh. No, yeah, you have some creative ideas for zombie movies. That was not one of them.
But here's the clincher. It will be starring Will B. Smith.
Great. And it will be stupid. I'm just saying.
All right, that concludes Yahoo Answers Answers. On to our final segment, which will be a new segment this week. Crush, Kill, Destroy.
Destroy. Crush, Kill, Destroy. Crush, Kill, Destroy. Crush, Kill,
Destroy. Heard of the game Fuck, Marry, Kill? We're going to do a variation on that.
Who's Marry, Kill?
You've been saving that joke for like a week, haven't you?
Absolutely.
So we're going to do a variation on that. It's called Crush, Kill, Destroy. Who's Kill, Destroy? Is he some Irish guy? That was also my black voice. So basically what this means is we're going to name three people who have been in the news this week. and you have to decide which one you would crush, which one you would kill, and which one you would destroy. Now, you can define those words however you want, but I'll go first to demonstrate how I'm conceptualizing it. So this is Crush, Kill, Destroy, the Michelle edition. So the three Michelles that have been in the news this week, Dan, do you want to tell us who they are?
Well, first is Ana Lucia, whose real name is Michelle Rodriguez. I said that like that because I'm half Mexican. And she was in the news because she came out as a gay.
Which everyone was shocked about.
Yeah, no one could tell. But then the second Michelle in the news this week is Michelle Obama, who I think in the future will come out as a gay, but was in the news because Michelle B. something. But she was on the news because she went on the Jimmy Fallon show to pitch Obamacare, and she said that young people need Obamacare because they're knuckleheads. And then finally, the last Michelle on the list is Michelle Kwan, and I actually have no idea why she's in the news or why she's still relevant.
She's relevant because she's a figure skater, it's the Winter Olympics, and she's endorsing Coca-Cola, so people are mad at her because that's unhealthy.
Oh, that's right. She's endorsing Coca-Cola, an official sponsor of the Olympics. I forgot. Go ahead.
Right. Official sponsor of the Olympics. And it's not like she's making lots of money doing other things anymore.
She owns an ice rink in Anaheim.
Which do you think she's making more money from? Coca-Cola endorsement or ice rink in Anaheim?
I don't know. Have you been to Anaheim? There's a lot of people with skates on their shoulders.
Warm, sunny Anaheim. Okay. So this is what I would do. So, Michelle Rodriguez, I would kill. Why, you ask? Why would I kill Michelle Rodriguez? Because she didn't really do anything wrong. I mean, she's just trying to pursue her happiness. And she's used to dying in what she's in. That's pretty much what she's used for. Tough woman who they kill her because it's a surprise to kill her. But then they bring her back later. So if you go, I'm going to kill you, she probably expects you're going to bring her back to life later. So
it's true.
Then I would destroy Michelle Kwan's knee. Maybe get Tonya Harding, you know, just use a pipe.
Or yes.
Coca-Cola. Yeah, bag full of Coca-Cola.
So she can only win the silver? Yeah, got it.
Then I would crush Michelle Obama with a giant Godzilla foot. And I would do that because
a 150-meter Godzilla? Yeah.
Yeah. I would do that because I think if you grind her shoulder bones, they would make a very good paste.
And so much of it. Yeah, that's good. Speaking of Godzilla, did you see the new poster for Godzilla?
Yeah, they didn't care.
They keep making Godzilla bigger and bigger and bigger. By the size of Godzilla on this poster, he is 150 meters tall.
And he can still just barely, his foot's barely wide enough to step on Michelle Obama.
Or, yes.
Or just
one of
his shoulders.
That was the joke, yes.
Did you know the original Godzilla was only 50 meters tall?
Well, I mean, 50 meters tall in Japan is like 150 meters in America.
Zing.
So, Dan, how would you, who would you crush, kill, and destroy?
Okay, so I have a slightly different take on this. I would destroy Michelle Obama. Just because I would like to wipe her from everyone's memory. I know it will be difficult, but it needs to be done. She's completely irrelevant. She's had this sort of fight against... These are her two big things while she's been in office, okay? Fight against childhood obesity, which, well done there. And then fight against thirst. She wants people to stay hydrated. Really? Really? So she needs to be destroyed, gone forever, just obliterated from the planet. No one would miss her, not even Barack. I would kill Michelle Kwan because it's alliterative. And I would crush on Michelle Rodriguez because she's actually fairly attractive, even though she's a gay. And she would not, be into me, but... Nonetheless, I think that's what I would do with Michelle. Or Rodriguez, yeah, that one.
That's what I would do with Michelle. Which one?
So that's how I conceptualize it. I wanted to go a little nicer with Crush, especially because someone like Michelle Rodriguez does not deserve it. And if I did it, it would be a hate crime.
The doctor?
I don't have any bad feelings towards Michelle Kwan. I think she tried hard, but in my heart, I'm a Christy Yamaguchi kind of girl. So I have to tell Michelle Kwan. There can only be one ice skating Asian. And
what about the entire team from China, Japan?
There can be only one!
What if all of them were secretly Highlanders? They just, after they get done with practice, every day they battle to see who gets their head cut off with a skate.
Great. This is a terrible parody movie. You are not on your A game today. No.
I would crush Michelle Obama. I think I really just debated between crush her, like, with her own arms, or just have a really obese children drinking giant soda spit on her.
If you took her arms and crossed them across her body and pulled in another direction, would that crush her?
That's what
I think you never see her celebrating, because if she raised her own arms above her head, they would fall and crush her.
I would have to destroy Michelle Rodriguez because she keeps coming back. Like, I mean, yeah, Resident Evil, and then she keeps just coming back.
Wasn't it in Resident Evil and in The Fast and the Furious in the same year?
Yeah.
She had died earlier in the franchise, and then they brought her back in both of those franchises?
Yeah, take the hint, Michelle Rodriguez, go away.
Just go away.
Or we'll send Michael after you. All right, well, that about sums it up. What did you learn today, Dan?
I learned that the Lego movie is maybe slightly more complex than I thought it was, but at the same time, it's not, and you're wrong.
What about you, Doctor?
I learned the best place for fall is North Dakota.
And I learned that everyone's doppelganger has a middle name that starts with B, and that I should stop wasting everyone's time. No place to go my side. No place to go.